So hey, Abner, I hear you have quite a bit to say about Google Podcast shutdown recently.
Man, Google Podcast was simple. It's okay. So before Google Podcasts, I did use Pocket Casts, like you did, like you do. But I switched to Google Podcasts later on because it was just so much simpler than any other podcasting client out there. It was so easy to start a podcast, and really, I don't think anybody has matched that, especially not YouTube Music.
No, as much as I want to try podcasts on YouTube Music, I keep my music there. I listen to lots of mixes. I like to listen to, if I do listen to a podcast, it's going to be on YouTube directly as opposed to YouTube Music.
Like, interesting.
Yeah, like the idea of sometimes a video element is a big draw for me. But yeah, I'm a Pocket Cast guy through and through. I originally paid, I think it would have been, I remember feeling back in the day, paying for Pocket Cast was hurting me financially because it was only £3.99. And this is back in the days when I was like, every app should be under a pound or under 80 cents or under a dollar. And I remember downloading it and thinking, oh wow, this is what a premium application feels like, and a premium podcast application at that. And yeah, I haven't looked back. I constantly go back and check my stats. I think I'm something at about 200 days of listening or something since I first downloaded it. But yeah, it's by far and away my favorite. But as you alluded to, I have tried Google Podcasts. I'm disappointed to hear that it's shutting down. I'm sure people listening to this are probably thinking, where the hell am I going to consume this podcast from now? We're on all good services, Spotify, YouTube Music. Well, for a little while longer as it works, Google Podcasts. But for me, the fact that you could stream online as well, so stream through the web browser.
It was a very good web app.
Yeah,
website,
Yeah, I think that was the one thing that made me think I'm going to switch, because Pocket Cast charges for that.
Yeah, it's Google Basics. Google Podcast started June of 2018. It saw several big updates over the course of its life. It's at the start. Google had a really ambitious plan for podcasting and audio. They were talking about these AI features, AI transcription, surfacing podcasts as search results alongside text and video. They had this big ambitions for this product, and ambitions that were very Googly in terms of thinking big. But it failed. Okay, this is where we have to talk about the YouTube aspect of it, because YouTube is where all media is, and it's centralizing around that query. You said something interesting about how you would go to YouTube direct rather than YouTube Music to listen to podcasts. I'm still the opposite, because YouTube, I don't know, people do love video podcasts, that's clear. And the success of video podcasts on YouTube, honestly, it happened organically without YouTube really fostering it. It's just a place for video, and people started uploading there and adding video components to their podcasts. So that happened organically, and you can see the logic of why Google is centralizing all its media platforms there. It makes sense why that's happening, but no, I disagree with it.
I love that you disagree with it. I get it. I 100% get it. I think it took me a long time to come around to the idea of a video element to a podcast, because podcasts always, to me, seemed really a passive thing.
No, absolutely, yes. Background audio.
Yeah, like... through. I think for me previously it was music, and I think as I reached my late 20s, I was basically in a phase of like, I don't think I can keep listening to the radio or to music that I don't care about. I want to listen to like interesting subjects and subjects that like really do get like strike at the core of me as a person. Like I loved all of those original. I don't know if you remember the original rollout of Serial. What an incredible experience that was. That felt like, I don't know. I can't even describe how that felt at the time in like 2014, I think. And podcasting has come a huge way since then, obviously.
Mm.
Like, it's such a shame that Google isn't that they've given up on podcasting, because obviously YouTube Music is going to be where they're living, and surely they have the evidence to make the decision that YouTube is probably fostering more podcast growth than many other platforms. Mm. I think, I wonder if they could have just kept Google Podcasts as its own little siloed project, where for people who didn't want the video component or weren't using Spotify, because obviously we're seeing Spotify take on all of the biggest podcasts probably on the planet. Maybe there was some sort of, okay, YouTube is a bigger platform than Spotify. We can potentially leverage it podcast better on the YouTube platform than we can as Google Podcasts, which again is, I would probably say for a lot of iOS people, it'd be put off. A lot of people don't like Google on the iOS side of things from what I can hear. So, but they still use YouTube, and YouTube is probably a better home for podcast reach on for those particular, that particular audience, that is.
It's again, one of the reasons I thought Google Podcasts was going to be successful in the long run was because Google decided to align it with search. This idea of the RSS, the open web, in theory, that was going, that could have lasted forever, because if the fundamental RSS nature of podcasts doesn't change, all these small, tiny podcasts, Google Podcasts should have worked. But again, like one of the most cynical arguments is that YouTube gives YouTube end-to-end control of podcasting, of ads especially. So again, that's why they centralized it. But I really wish, okay, like again, let's talk about the fundamentals. The Google Podcasts versus the YouTube Music app. The YouTube Music app with podcasts feels like Spotify, no difference there. But it also feels like every other podcasting app, which has so much complexity to getting to a podcast. Google Podcasts has had this simple feed that you could see your latest episodes in. And if you wanted to dive into a particular show, you just tap the top carousel. It was so fast getting to a podcast. In YouTube Music, for comparison, the equivalent of that is going first opening the app, going to the library tab, selecting the podcast filter at the top, selecting your show, and then going into an episode. It's inelegant, and seeing these, to me, podcasts are more informative than entertaining, and I just don't associate, well, everything else, music is all obviously entertainment. I just can't, it's not there for me. It's the mismatch of what I want is, I made a joke a few years ago that the YouTube Music app is becoming YouTube Audio. if YouTube,
I think that is the vehicle, isn't it? YouTube is such a separately huge brand in its own right. It kind of makes sense. And as we've been chatting, I have been looking at the Google Podcast app. I know that it's still technically operational in certain parts of the world, and in the US, I believe it's warning everybody to switch now, or is the
app- in the US it just shut down. As of recording, it like shut down less than an hour ago.
Okay.
In the US, as of Thursday morning, it's offline.
So how long do we foresee potentially people being able to use it in the rest of the world, by the end of the weekend it'll be down for everybody else as well?
No, I think by year's end, they're going to offer a few months migration, the export option to YouTube Music. So I don't know, maybe that's by end of the year, but probably September or so, probably goes down for the rest of the world too.
I mean, just looking from an app perspective, and I'm actually, I have it in my hand right now on my Pixel 8, the UI is so, I don't want to say simple because that's disrespectful. I think it's just so cohesively, there's a cohesion, sorry, between you opening a podcast that you prefer, you like, you found, and just hit and play. There's no airs and graces. It's just
yeah,
super that was simple, super clean.
The Google podcast, if I'm being completely honest, AMA a few years ago, and they said that simplicity was the point, that they wanted to make podcasts accessible for new listeners. And again, that was a great idea.
I mean, the light mode is, I'm a light mode guy anyway, I'm pro light mode, but I think it looks great in the light mode. And let me just quickly enable the dark theme, because I think, yeah, it's fine. It looks pretty slick. I think I think with a lot of podcast applications, there's definitely a lot of how would I put it? There's a lot of stolen ideas. There is one almost unified interface that every single podcast seems to have. And looking at Google Podcasts right now, obviously it's a first party application. It looks very much like a well made Google Podcast. It's just a shame that we don't have more design choices, because I'm guessing that's why a lot of people fall in love with many Google applications. It's just a shame to see this one, another one bite the dust, as it were. But yeah, what are you gonna do then for migrating, Abner? I'm really interested to see where you go to with your podcast streaming and listening preferences in terms of applications.
So, as I use Google Podcasts, I still use Pocket Casts because of chapter support. Some of my shows have chapters, and it's useful for skipping stuff. So probably Google Podcasts for that one show, few shows that need chapter support, and I'm going to brave it with YouTube Music, I guess. But honestly, it's this basic functionality is still missing as a podcasting client. You don't get new episode notifications. One of the only ways to tell is for you to manually check or to see something in the main feed alongside all your other music about a new episode release. You can't mark as play stuff, and as a completionist, that drives me crazy.
Oh, I didn't actually know that you couldn't do that.
You can't manually do it. So when you finish an episode, it does get marked as played, or if you drag the slider to the end, it marks it as played, but there's no manual button for you to, let's say there's an episode that you don't want to listen to. There's no way to quickly do it. You just have to drag it down, and that's so annoying. It's just so wild that Google Podcasts is down without this, what I consider to be basic podcasting functionality.
I mean, we could probably sit here all day and talk about when Google is doing this for certain products and services, where the contingency plan is, oh, we'll build it on the fly rather than integrating those features before the shutdown or the migration is supposed to happen.
I think
it definitely reminds me heavily of that Google Play Music, YouTube Music transition, and that the core features that are in place are not quite where they probably should be in terms of. I was an ardent Google Play Music user, but I remember back in the day uploading my entire CD library there, and then able to access it. We're talking 80,000 tracks. Obviously, wow. that initial transition was so difficult because I was so used to Google Play Music just being an archive, not a streaming service for me, if that makes sense. So YouTube Music felt set up for streaming and streaming music and being permanently online. And if they haven't set up a section or the podcast basics, that sounds really, really disappointing, because people are going to be moving to what is an inferior product, right? And from what you're telling me, it sounds like an inferior product.
Okay, so if I were to make the devil's argument, it would be that people don't care about this kind of stuff. There's a casualness to how YouTube in general works. You have video subscriptions from channels you follow. Marcus Plate is not an expectation there. Again, for most people, as video podcasts have proven out, they're very casual listeners of podcasts. Do most people not care about this functionality? Is it such a lean back experience that they listen to a show when they listen to a show? That sounds like a horrible experience for me. But I don't know. Maybe this that the mainstream is fine with this casualness. I've always associated YouTube Music, the app, with the songs and albums to be one of the more casual music apps in terms of discovery, in terms of the up next queue. So I'm wondering if they're trying to keep that in place with podcasting. It's, again, this isn't a devil's argument for me.
Yeah, it's strange. It's another convoluted process where we're scratching our heads thinking about it. But podcasting in general is a strange topic of conversation, because some people are ardent podcast listeners. I hope that anybody out there listening to this right now is an ardent listener, and you're going to continue to listen for many years to come, and you're excited for every upload. But like you say, maybe the idea that Google wants it to be a little bit more relaxed, laid back, is part of the reason why video podcasts have been so popular, because people have seen clips. Like, the idea of podcast clips has helped create a more passive ingestion of information that's been given in, say, an 8 hour. Someone might do 8 hours of podcasts in a week. That might be the whole thing, and then you get 25 seconds of just the core. Okay, this is our talking point for this particular episode. Like, so maybe there is some science behind it. I'm sure Google have the data to back it up somewhere, but it just seems really at odds with what we, as probably myself, me and you, are probably hardcore podcast consumers, and we like to go through and complete a podcast or archive ones that we've not listened to, and we have our regular subscriptions. I feel it's different from YouTube, as someone who creates for the platform and someone who has we've helped build subscribers for 9to5 Google's channel. So I wonder if people consume differently, because I have lots of subscriptions on my own YouTube account, but I don't watch every single video.
No,
I pick and choose.
No.
So maybe that's maybe that's a theory that there's some theory to that people don't listen to every podcast. They just pick and choose, say, the guests, the topics, whatever it happens to be. Maybe that'll be a success for Google. I don't know. Maybe that'll be a success for YouTube Music's integration into podcasting. But I'm definitely with you in that it feels out of place. It's going to feel really strange, the idea of using YouTube Music to listen to podcasts. And for that reason, I probably will stick with Pocket Casts, and I may even consider subscribing to their monthly tier to listen on desktop as well.
Yeah, it's this. To speak of the benefits of YouTube Music as a podcasting client, I'd say that it's getting a lot. It has a lot more resources than Google Podcasts ever had. YouTube in general has so much more resources. For example, with the switch, with podcasts coming to YouTube Music, you automatically got a Wear OS app out of it. You get an Android app that has a home screen widgets. You get music.youtube always exists, .com always existed. But you have that, and that's full featured enough, I guess. But the positive case is that podcasting could really get a lot more resources. Like, they could do some stuff with transcription, because YouTube obviously already has closed captioning. There's an optimistic case if Google, but it all requires YouTube to be a better shepherd of podcasting. And again, from like the initial launch, which it feels to me feature incomplete, it's not positive. They haven't proven that they're good at it just yet.
Yeah, strange scenario because, yeah, podcasts is people care about podcasts, and yeah, that I think that kind of wraps up where we are in terms of like our podcast stuff. But you had some more. We had some more news in terms of updates and whatnot for Android, which is interesting. This week we had a fairly. I'm not going to say it's not quite feature drop level. Definitely medium. Not.
Yeah.
Medium update in terms of an OTA. How are you finding the new features on the Pixel Watch?
So yeah, the Pixel Watch got a feature called Vibration Watch, Double Watch. That's charming. I've gone at something else. Vibration Time, maybe. But anyways, you can tap your Pixel Watch and Pixel Watch 2 watch face with two fingers. If you tap it once, you get the time. You get the hour, excuse me, as a series of vibrations and haptic patterns. If you tap it twice, you get the minutes. So it's an accessibility feature, but I'm also viewing it as a way to showcase the Pixel Watch 2's better haptics compared to the original Pixel Watch.
That's really sad because I only have the original Pixel Watch, which I try my best to keep updated. And playing around with that vibration watch feature, don't get me wrong, I think the haptics are great on the original, and I have it in my hand right now. I think the actual vibration feedback at first confused me because I was like, has this been explained correctly? And then I was like, am I an idiot for not understanding that which each vibration means which, if that kind of makes sense? But then I thought about it, and obviously you alluded to it being an accessibility feature. And then when I thought about it more, I was like, this is 100% Google doing their Google things in terms of making accessibility features that you wouldn't ordinarily think about, or they may have existed elsewhere and are not widely known, and then integrating them into a product. And I think this is something that Google doesn't scream about enough in terms of their software, and potentially, obviously, there's a hardware element here, is making things accessible and adding accessibility features that genuinely benefit a certain subsection of their audience. Like, I can't see my own benefit from this. Maybe if I wanted to learn Morse code and have that tapping at the screen, like, it's great to get that feedback. But I think there's definitely going to be people out there who use this functionality all the time. And
honestly, Morse code would be better than the two they provide today. I would learn Morse code that way.
Well, it seems a really strange situation because clearly other watches have their other solutions for, say, people who are hard of hearing, who have like eyesight issues. And this is a feature that to me screams, this is for people who maybe have eyesight issues but want to wear a wearable for whatever reason. And maybe they can get the information that's on the watch, like their health data on a screen. On a larger screen like the Pixel tablet or a Pixel or whatever device it happens to be, because they may have low vision, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this one feels like one of those features aimed at people who potentially have those eyesight issues. Mm-hmm. And it's been labeled as just Vibration Watch, which I think is a terrible name, which is an absolutely terrible name. And it's in the vibration section. And some people are going to have this and accidentally double tap the screen just trying to change stuff and get vibrations and be like, huh? What's going on here? So maybe this should have been some sort of, when the OTA arrived on the watch,
an explanation
at the very least, because it seems like a good feature, but at the same time there's confusing elements which goes back to the podcast thing again, but we're not going to go back there.
It's interesting. It's highly watch face dependent, because if your watch face has any complications, double tapping it will open the complication. And another thing I found is that I keep swiping up the notification shade. The screen is a bit too small on the Pixel Watch for this feature. If you really want to take advantage of this feature, switch to a watch face with no complications. It's a bit weird. But yeah, it's a good idea to have. It's a nice option to have, and it helps the Pixel Watch feel more feature complete, especially next to the Apple Watch, which just have something similar. it's good that Google is building out these capabilities just to make sure the options are in place for the people that want them. But yeah, right now it's it's still on for me, but I'm trying to figure out when to use it naturally versus when to use it because I need to test it out.
I could maybe see it be useful on transit, public transit, maybe if you can't quite lift up your wrist. From my perspective, I'm definitely talking from someone who has fairly good vision. I can't foresee a reason why I would use it because my tunnel vision is saying that this is an accessibility feature that is not much use to me because I can just look at it or I can look at my phone but maybe there is someone out there who this is going to benefit. So that's a good thing. Like I'm applauding the inclusion. It's nice. It's just nice to see the OG Pixel Watch get the feature as well, because I was kind of worried that as soon as the Pixel Watch 2 came around, they were going to put more capabilities on that rely on that better chipset. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to see that the Pixel Watch is effectively almost feature parity, yeah, between that and the second gen, which is amazing to see. You don't often see that from products. So for a small OTA update, April patch, I think that's really nice to see the Pixel Watch gaining some functionality, because when we see those feature drops, it tends to be phone focused. Maybe if Google could do a little bit more with the original Pixel Buds, Pixel Buds A series, that'd be kind of nice. But yeah, I guess they're way out of cycle now. We're not going to see anything from Google on that front.
So the nice thing with Vibration Watch was how the March feature drop brought a lot of fitness Fitbit features to the original, and it was kind of. There was nothing for the Pixel Watch 2 in that feature drop. So this slightly makes up for it. On that note, I kind of want to do a check-in with you. Are you using Video Boost a lot on the Pixel 8 Pro?
No. Yeah. The last time I used it was actually when I went to Amsterdam about a month ago. And I used it for the first time, like as a tourist. I've used it testing periods and stuff like that. And I tried it during the day because I know at nighttime it does genuinely make a difference.
Yeah.
But most of the time I don't film much at night, so I'll take an image. I'll take a picture because I love night sight. And at the end of the day, I'm not the person to ask about video because I have a dedicated mirrorless. So my full frame mirrorless camera will smoke Video Boost most of the time. But I did use it during the day, and I have to say I was slightly disappointed because it only
HDR.
Yeah, it was just a little bit different, but I do want to use it more. So sorry to sidetrack your question there, but I want to use it more.
No, it's I think Video Boost as a branding thing, as a name, I still think they should have read with Nightside Video, because like you said, what Video Boost does in daylight is not significant. What the Google highlighted was it aids stabilization, so maybe that's the case. But yeah, I think they should have gone harder with night sight video, and I really think they should have brought it down to the Pixel 8 too, because right now I really don't see people use Video Boost a lot, and maybe because it's limited to the 8 Pro, but it's compared to the original night sight feature in the Pixel 3. And especially with the Pixel 3a, that was read to such, like, people sharing the examples, tweeting out their photos, Instagram, whatnot. And I really don't think that's happening with Nightside Video. And it's kind of a shame because the first impression is everything. And it was kind of a middling first impression in terms of, are people actually using this?
Yeah, I think I want to use it more. This is the problem. I'm the kind of person who I have all these features in my pocket and I will use 5 or 6 and then I won't go beyond that. So in terms of the camera, like the camera stack on the Pixel has always been exceptional for stills. And I've always complained, if anyone's read my reviews previously of any previous Pixel device, every single time there is a video function that I'm desperate to have, and it arrives and I just don't use it because I think maybe I'm hoping for video to be better to almost compete on a even keel with Apple. And that's probably not feasible in the most part, but this is a feature where Google smokes the competition in terms of what functions are available. Like you say, Night Sight Video would have been the killer name. That should have been what they called it. And then people would have known straight away, oh, Google's really good at Night Sight and improving night images. Now they're improving night video. I'm going to use that video mode more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting to speak about. When was the last time you used it?
Yeah, I'm not a big video person, honestly. So probably January at this point.
Okay. So you're a bit like me in that you just use it sporadically when you shoot video because photos are like, you can share. I feel like photos are easier to share.
As well. Videos are more for me they're more for me in terms of like, you just want to keep a moment for yourself. You want to remember it well in the future. I don't really share videos or like post them anywhere. So that's still my disconnect. But yeah.
So with the, like, I know there's a big opportunity here for Google as well. Like if they, I know the limits, there's limitations. You can only record video boost at 10 minutes. This is me talking from someone who hasn't really paid that much attention. How long is the eclipse supposed to last in the next few days? Because that would have been the perfect. Is it going to be longer than that?
It's a few minutes. I'm not into the craze because I'm on the West Coast and I'm not seeing it, so I don't care, really.
Right. Okay. Let's talk a bit from like an opportunity.
Sun and moon. But yeah,
you could do it, right? You could. If you had Video Boost set up with a tripod ready to go, surely you could capture something very impressive when it comes to the solar eclipse. So would that not make sense for Google to be promoting this feature while also being like, okay, we're going to put this in our marketing material moving forward? Like this is one of our core features, right? Ready for the Pixel 9 if they're going to be able to do the processing on device. Because I do think that's the biggest problem with Video Boost for me is that it has to be uploaded. And then it comes back and you're limited to 30 FPS.
What Google said right now is that, I'm referring to a podcast episode they did, it's computationally not possible to do what they're doing on a smartphone. That said, they still, the optimistic thing was, they said they want to keep improving on-device video instead of like, offloading everything to the cloud from going forward, which could have been a possibility, I guess, since they do have the server infrastructure. But they do year over year, they do want to improve what the on-device performance of video can do. So that's a promising note in terms of them caring about that.
For me, in terms of video, I just want to see something that is within touching distance of Apple, because I must admit, when you shoot video on the iPhone, especially the most recent view with the improved sensors, I don't even know what they're doing that's different. It's just the ability to just constantly record at the highest frame rates, switching between lenses is smooth as silk. Like maybe there's evidence that most people don't care enough about mobile video, but we're the select few that
so like
do care.
When you upload it to Instagram, it gets compressed to heck. That's never changing. I don't know if Google Photos had like a, well, I guess you could use Google Photos, but it's not a social network by any stretch.
No. Yeah, I would like to see a few more frame. If Video Boost is, I know obviously the infrastructure, it would put a lot of strain on that, but to be able to go above that 30 FPS and have 60 FPS video that is completely boosted, I probably would use that more often. I think 60 is perfect because you got more applications to use it. Like if you're a videographer or if you want to use it for anything like that, I think that would be kind of cool. I'm fascinated to see what Google's plans are for video in future, because if they're going to do more computational stuff, which I hope they would have done like 5 years ago, it's just interesting because they have such a good hardware stack in terms of the camera system on the Pixel 8 Pro, and for stills it's fine, for video and if you're having to offload for video boost, I don't know if that says more about the quality of or their consistency and capabilities in video on device, because Apple are not doing that, and I don't foresee them doing that for a while.
No.
So maybe we'll see something different when Apple's next iPhone 16 launch. Maybe they'll come up with some impressive AI processing of video and take the lead even further. But it definitely felt like if Google is going to do this properly, they could definitely offload some of the processing load onto a device, surely, and then reduce the time you have to wait for video boost.
Yeah, that's
images
still,
to process. Because
from a basic standpoint, that's people's complaint about it still takes too long, even for short clips, and that seems like something can improve over time. But we'll see.
What would it take for you to use video boost for every video that you shoot? Just complete game changing.
I'd be worried about the bandwidth. I'd just be worried about the bandwidth, because when you're shooting something, you're obviously out. It would be over a cellular connection, and I would not want a video boost to upload over cellular. So it can only happen when I take it home. And there's such a gap between, like, you record something with video boost, you don't get to see what the video boosted version is until some time, and if the shot is long, you don't get to redo it.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and that's probably what stopped me from using it while doing touristy things, is that I knew that whilst I was roaming, I had a limited data allowance, and if I'm shooting, say, 3 or 4 minutes of Amsterdam, in its like its glory during the day, that I know I'm going to have to wait until like get back to the hotel, and hope that luckily the hotel Wi-Fi was very good, but I had to wait until probably 6 hours later before I could even see the video boost video uploading, and then another hour after that for a 2 minute clip to be downloaded and see that again. Yeah, and there's a few things that are strange. I think there could be some, surely there is some solution there where they could do something on device, because having to wait is so frustrating, especially like you say, you want instant feedback with video. You want to watch the video back at its best straight away. And if you're not doing that straight away, I think that's maybe why I could potentially see the feature dwindling over time and just existing and people not using it as a result of that, like you said. But if it came to older models, so it came to, say, the Pixel 8, smaller version, then maybe people would use it more, and maybe people would talk about it. But yeah, it's a strange one. It's a really, really strange one. Because I like the idea, the execution, not so much. Sorry. Hiccups there. I think in terms of overall, though, video boost is one of those things that, for me, is a value add. It's not the be all and end all. I'd prefer to see SuperRes Zoom, Zoom Enhance. SuperRes Zoom improved, and then Zoom Enhance come, because to me that's more valuable. I think as you say, if Google gets their act together and eventually releases that, then maybe we'll be impressed with it. But I don't know what the holdup is there. Maybe Video Boost should be put on the sidelines for a little bit, and let's get Zoom Enhance up and running on devices, because I think that's definitely something that is going to be more beneficial to everyone day to day than Video Boost would be, regardless.
We'll have so much to talk about when that happens. So much.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm pinched to Zoom and zooming in. I'm 100%. Telephoto guy over ultra wide for that reason, and clearly the industry's followed suit as well. But I think on that note, that really gives us what a fairly good summation of a fair few big topics that we've hit this week. Unless there's anything on your mind, Abner, that you want to get off your chest before we shoot off.
Nope, it's been a week.
It has been a week, and there will be more weeks in future. Such is life. Thanks for watching. This is episode 4 of Pixelated. I've been Damien, and I want to say thanks to Abner for joining me, and say bye.
Bye.
And yeah, we'll catch you in the next one. You can find us on all good podcast platforms. Sadly, not Google Podcasts for the foreseeable future, but you will be able to find RSS links on the website and anywhere else that offers good podcasts. So speak to you soon.
Bye.